if he ever imagined how hard it's going to be, he would have never started. So that's a kind of a gift of the young entrepreneurs, that most of them don't really know what's coming up.
Welcome and welcome back. Hi, Florian. How are you doing?
Hello, Mario. Good as always when I see you.
So, Florian, when you're on the road and crave for some healthy fast food on the run, is it the bowl or is it the salad?
It's definitely the bowl. I'm a huge fan of bowls. It's a real meal. You know, salad is salad, but a bowl is really... a nice thing
so,
for me.
So we're going to take that quote and confront later our guest. We have today with us a very dear friend, the co-founder and CIO. If you wonder what that means Chief Improvement Officer. We have here together the founder of Dean & David, the David within the Dean & David, so to say. And 17 years ago, he and his partner back then, Hermann Weifenbach, set up the first fast food 2.0, I would say, in Germany. Dean & David grew over the years to over 150 stores, 2,000 employees, and over 120 million sales. In 2021, Henry McGovern, who was also with us here on the show, invested. And now David stepped back as a CEO and went into the board. So it's a new chapter of Dean & David. And the last thing to mention, because it's quite unique, is that Dean & David is also the proud partner of Lufthansa. So if you fly to Germany or from Germany, you have the chance to eat David's product also in the plane. Welcome, David.
Hi, thank you for inviting me. And as I'm a big fan of your podcasts, I'm really happy to be here and to spend the next 45 minutes with you and your listeners.
So let's hope you stay a fan. After that, David, I know that you're a very reflective person. If you look back on these 17 years on your journey, was it easier as you thought or much more difficult as you thought?
That's a good question for the start. So let me take you back when I started, a little bit of background information. Sure. I dropped out of university in 2005, and I had no clue what to do with my life and what to do, especially with my work career. So I grabbed my backpack and went for a world trip for 6 months all around the world, and was hoping to find some inspirations during that trip. So that's almost 20 years ago now. And in fact, the whole idea of Dean & David was created or came to me during that world trip. It was a potpourri of different impressions that I got from street kitchens in Bangkok over juice bars in Australia to the first salad bars in New York. And out of those impressions, I mixed up the concept of Dean & David. And as I came back, I was 25. So you can imagine a 25-year-old guy who got not much experience in gastronomy, who has little knowledge of entrepreneurship, started straight away after the university. And looking back now, I think it was good that I didn't had all the knowledge that I have now, because at the end, probably it's much harder than you think it is. And I read a very good interview with the founder of Nivida, who more or less said the same. He said, if he ever imagined how hard it's going to be, he would have never started. So that's a kind of a gift of the young entrepreneurs, that most of them don't really know what's coming up. Not only when it comes to the business part, but especially in a country like Germany with a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to all these state government regulations and things like this, which are driving me still crazy, but were driving me, of course, in the first years also a lot of crazy, because I just didn't know what's going to happen and what's going to come up. And every year there came a new surprise. And so coming back to your questions, I was lucky enough not to know what is going to come and what is gonna what I'm gonna what will I have to expect in those almost 20 years now?
We interviewed two people which come from a similar, at least geographical area, Rainer Becker from Summa and this week actually Chris Hoffmann from 25 Hours. And I asked them both my signature question about the Schwellenangst, and they both said like we didn't have any Schwellenangst at the beginning because we were so young and so naive, but now we have it because Rainer Becker shared he has huge Schwellenangst to bring Summa to Munich because he's scared. And Chris Hoffmann said, I never had Schwellenangst, but now I have because I proved it with 25 Hours and now I'm doing it again with my second hotel brand. So growing up as a leader of the business and an entrepreneur, David, because most likely you haven't felt the Schwellenangst at the beginning of your career, was there a moment where it really became hard for you to jump and open the door and embrace the unknown and go into another chapter in the development of your brand? Did you have any time this Schwellenangst feeling?
Yes. I agree with the two persons you just mentioned. I was really lucky that I was so young and that I had not really any responsibilities. Yeah? No mortgage to pay, no kids to take care of, and so on and so on. So if I would have failed, I would have been going to bankruptcy, of course. But if you go to bankruptcy with 27 or 28, it's not as hard as it's like now, where I'm just sitting here in my house that I'm building for 3 years, and that took me much more money than I ever thought it will be. So I have to pay back the bank the next 40 years the loan, and also I became father 4 months ago. So, of course, there's a total different responsibility that I got now. So there were various moments where I had this Schwellenangst. And by the way, my wife is always laughing every time we hear your podcast in the car. She's just waiting for the Schwellenangst. It's kind of funny. Oh, when is going to be the Schwellenangst again? There were various moments where I had these Schwellenangst. And I remember my father coming down. He was a professor at the university a couple of days before I opened the first store. And he came to my room and he was asking me, David, are you really knowing what you're doing? They supported me on the one hand. On the other hand, they could not understand that somebody who had two university degrees and were speaking four languages and who could make a great career probably in whatever banking or whatever, serious job, so to say. And he came down to me and asked me, David, are you really sure of what you're doing there? And of course I said, yes. Yeah. But when he got out of the room, I was like, oh, am I really sure? Of course, I wasn't sure. This was a totally new concept. It wasn't proofed in Germany. Probably a concept like this wasn't proofed anywhere in the world because I didn't know any concept in the world which was really similar. It was not like I'm opening the pizzeria number 10,000 in Germany where you know pizza is working. If your pizza is working, you don't know. But at least you know that pizza is working. So I wasn't sure that Dean and David as a concept was working, despite of that it's working because I'm doing a good job or whatever. Yeah. So that was definitely the first time. And then there were various other moments. Every time we went to a new country, for example. So I think one of the reasons why I'm still here, and there were a lot of other companies that I got to know in the last 20 years who are not still there, who went sooner or later, had to close again. And one of the reasons I think is that I'm kind of a Dr. Doom. So I always expect the worst. I hope for the best, but I expect the worst. And wherever I open anything or whatever I do when it comes to new businesses or whatever, I always kind of expect to close down. And with that mindset, I go into the business. And this is maybe one of the reasons why even COVID couldn't kill us and killed a lot of other companies. Because I kind of was always prepared for that worst case. Of course, not especially COVID now. Nobody was prepared for that. Mm-hmm. That was beyond any imagination. But nevertheless, I think I was pretty fast able to switch into a total crisis modus from day one on. And I think this could be an explanation why it worked out pretty well, even in COVID.
David, can you tell us, because you said you can switch into a crisis mode. How does your crisis mode look like? How do you act when you are in that crisis? Do you consult with your shareholders? Do you relay with your team? Do you do it by yourself? How do you act in crisis mode?
Honestly, I think I am the best for myself when I do it on my own. Mm-hmm. I'm a pretty strong personality, I would say, and I can deal with pressure. I can deal with crisis, and my brain's working best. I've found out when I'm active. That means when there's going to be a crisis, I always do two things. The first thing is I go somewhere hiking in the mountains or something like this. That's where my brain works the best, or when I'm cycling. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is I discovered kind of a technique for me personally that worked pretty well in the last years. I always say myself, I expect the worst, of course, but as long as it did not happen, I'm always positive, forward thinking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like when COVID started, it was like, okay, we're going to go all bankrupt. Kind of this is the first thing you have in mind. Everything had to close down, no more customers, ongoing costs, landlords wanted their money, and so on and so on. So if you have ongoing costs but no income, the only consequence is to go into kind of bankruptcy. Yeah, I mean, what else can you do? So that's the first thought that everybody had probably. Then mm-hmm. my second thought is, as long as I'm not in bankruptcy, I still think there's going to be a way out, whatever. So, and this kind of helps me to keep calm and not having sleepless nights. So even in COVID, I had good nights. I was sleeping good the first month. So because I have this mindset, as long as I'm not bankrupt, I still believe there's going to be somewhere a solution. And then it turned out there were solutions, thanks to the government on the one hand, thanks to good teams, thanks to whatever.
You mentioned your team. I would like to come back to your team, even though you said you do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you consult in such a situation, or do you make up your mind completely by your own when you're hiking? Don't you challenge your ideas and solutions?
Yeah, of course. I also do it with the team. But the question was, where am I best? And I think mm-hmm. I'm best when I do it on my own. But the bigger a company gets, and of course we are a franchise company as well, you have to consult your franchisees, you have to consult your team, and so on and so on. But to me, I personally feel I have the best output when I do it on my own. Mm-hmm. That's what I meant. Yeah, now, yeah. That doesn't mean that I do it on my own all the way. You cannot run a company for 20 years with so many partners and employees and so on and so on if you do everything by your own. I mean, they all leave you sooner or later.
Yeah, right.
David, because you spoke now about your development and you said I had to learn over the years. You started the business pretty young, very inexperienced, as you said, and you're 17 years down the road. So if you consider that you haven't made cautious decisions as a baby, you're probably in the cautious age longer with the company than without the company. So part of your personal development is basically parallel to the company development. And it also carries your name. So what, looking back now, how did that work in, how did the person David developed and how did the company develop? Do you think that meant parallel to that, or did you feel the company is dragging you and stretching you to develop yourself, or the other way around? If you reflect on that, how much did that help? Because you grow so big now with almost 200 stores, 5 countries, and also you had to grow as a person. Can you look back on that journey of personal development parallel to the challenges of the business?
That's a good question. I thought about that lately, because I dropped out as a CEO, of course, and the decision to drop out was not an easy one, as you can imagine, because this is like all my heart went into this company and I worked 80 hours a week. I went to bed with the company and I grew up, I got up with the company, and in my mind, I was dreaming of the company. I'm still probably dreaming of the company, but, so first thing, it was a give and take, I would say. I definitely wouldn't be the person now that I'm turning 45 without Dean and David. The way the company developed, I developed, and there were a lot of positive things I took out of that development. One of the main things that I see in my daily business when I meet other people, there's almost nothing that can, in Germany we say, aus der Ruhe bringen, that can take away the calm from me, kind of, yeah? Because you had so many situations in those 20 years, almost 20 years, where you thought that can't happen. Somebody's employees that steal money. A government that treats you totally unfair when it comes to some tax things, landlords that betrayed you, whatever can happen in those 20 years probably was happening, including COVID, which was not even thinkable. Yeah. So the more of these experiences you have, the more you learn, life goes on. Even those things that doesn't bring you on, if you keep standing, if you keep pushing, if you keep working on, you always find a solution. So when now I make it a bit bigger than it is, yeah. But let's say the worst possible scenario is now World War III. Everybody's going crazy. Probably I will sit here and will say, okay, World War III. It's going to be tough, but even World War III, we're going to find a solution. We're going to, I don't know how, but it's going to work out. So this is probably one of the main things that I took with me. And I see that at other people's, that other people, they go kind of crazy for things where I think myself, what? You're going crazy out of this? I mean, I was going crazy as well in the first maybe 2 years, but after the first 2 years, I already had so much things that happened that I thought, okay, that's not going to kill me. So you get relaxed and relaxed and relaxed, but also it takes away, of course, a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. If you work in such an environment, and if you do it like I did it, like I was deciding everything at Dean and David, from the music to the interior to the food, That's a huge amount of energy you need to put in that company, and that's also one of the reasons why I felt now is the time to drop out, because the older you get, we all know that the energy is not growing with, at least not for me. Right. And at the end, 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, when I first spoke to my shareholders and I told them, guys, I really feel I don't have the energy. I don't have the power anymore to run that business the way that I expect me to run it. So we have to think about finding somebody else who's taking over the job. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough decision, of course. Yeah? I mean, it's not like you wake up and say, okay, it's kind of, you give your child to a new parent. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's not easy.
But you
have to do it if you feel that it has to be done.
Yeah. Can we dive into that situation just for a moment, David, when you decided to hand over the helm to a new CEO? Because as you mentioned, you give away your baby, you give away what you actually built. That is what did that made with you in that situation?
First of all, it's not like a decision like this has to grow. It's not like you wake up and you say, okay, tomorrow I don't want to be CEO anymore. Or maybe you even say, I can't be CEO anymore, at least not a good CEO. So that's something that grows over weeks, over months, probably. And you have to be very honest with yourself. And Mario said it at the beginning. You can say a lot of bad things about me, but probably not that I'm not reflecting myself. So I try to reflect myself all the time. And even when I behave bad, I know I behave bad. I still behave sometimes bad, but at least I know that I do. It's something that grows, and it's something that you make up. I made up with my own. I was, of course, consulting my wife and maybe one or two of my best friends. But overall, I was making that up on my own because I had to make the decision. And in the end, if I regret it, then I don't want to blame anybody else than me. So that's why I say do it on your own. And then when you make the decision, then you have to be really, then you have to take your guts or whatever you say and really do it now. And I think the new CEO, greetings to Katrin, it's a woman who took over 4 months ago or 5 months ago. I think nobody expected that David will be really calm, but I would say I am. And Mario is part of our board, so he probably can say that's true, confirm. If you go that direction and if you make that decision, you have to stand for the decision. And we all know those old men running companies, not able to let go and come every day to the company again, or who have children and give over their 55-year-old son the company, but still every day they ask, what have you done in the
right?
And I always hated people like, not hate, but you know, I always said, I don't want to end up like this. So if you make the decision, you have to stand the decision. And even if some things are not the way that you think it should be done in the company, you have to live with it. Yeah. And this is also something you have to make up before you do the decision, and not afterwards, because then it's too late and then it's going to be chaos.
Yeah. David, the your company, your brand is basically, I mean, bold salad, healthy food. It's very contemporary. It hits the zeitgeist in a way. And I can imagine that over the past 70 years, seeing that society actually becomes kind of more consciousness about what they are eating and how they want to eat, et cetera, must give you a certain drive that you say, I'm actually on the right way. At the same time, my feeling is that everybody talks about healthy food, but on the other side, QSR brands are striving and making a lot of money, and at the end, people buying not the good food, they buy cheap food in a way. Is that just my feeling, or is it true? And if it is true, isn't that kind of frustrating?
That's also a very good question. And if you would have asked me 15 years ago, probably I would have said in 2025, there's no more McDonald's and no more Burger King and whatever, because everybody knows how important healthy food is. You live longer, you feel better, you look better. There's only positive things when it comes to healthy food. And the reality is that in those 15 years, almost nothing changed. There is changes. They are much slower than I expected them. Always reminds me of the quote that Bill Gates once said. He said, we always overestimate the changes of the next 2 years and underestimate the changes of the next 10 years. When it comes to health and food, probably you can say we underestimate the changes of the next 50 years, hopefully. It is really fascinating that the change is so slow, and we see now a little less meat. People eat a little less meat, at least in the Western Europe or European US countries. Everybody's talking about healthy food, and you read it everywhere, and everybody knows how important it is. But yeah, I agree. When you look what the people eat, it's still pizza, burgers, French fries, and so on and so on. So frustrating, though, absolutely not. I never had the intention with Dean and David to be kind of a and a teacher, and to tell the people you have to eat now healthy or whatever. So I just wanted to make an offer, and who's interested in taking this offer is welcome, and who not is also welcome. Yeah. So that's just something that you have to deal with it. And I'm very happy that I eat healthy and I feel good, and I'm 45 and I'm really sporty and whatever. We'll see what the next 10 or 15 or 20 years bring.
There, at the same year when you had the idea of Dean and David, some guys in US set up Sweet Greens, and Sweet Greens became one of these hero brands. And when you look at them, they had at the IPO 5 billion valuation, and although they dropped after COVID, they're still on 3 billion. And then you look at the concept and you feel like it's not rocket science. They have more or less the same amount of stores than you have. If you look at that discrepancy between the valuation of your company and the valuation of them, how do you analyze that, and what does that do with you? Because at the same time as you, probably similar guys than you, had the same idea. They just were in another city. They were in New York, you were in Munich, and then you see such a huge difference in valuation. What do you make up of that?
First of all, I was really happy to see how they developed and how successful they went to the stock exchange. It was really crazy. I mean, they had, I think when they went to the stock exchange, they even had less stores than we do. And their valuation was 5 billion, was totally crazy. And probably they knew it was crazy and I knew it was crazy. So it dropped down, but it still is far over a billion. So that's good news. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you start comparing Europe or Western Europe with the US, you always lose. It's not only our brand or the gastronomy or whatever. It's every brand. The US is just a much bigger market. There's much more money, and of course, the evaluations in the US are totally different than they are in Europe. That's the way it is. So for me, it's not a problem. And I'm just happy to see that other brands around the world succeed. But even if you look at Sweet Green, I think they have 200 or 250 stores for a market like the US with over 300 million in people there. And probably, I don't know, 20,000 McDonald's. It's so small. It's nothing. And it also shows that there's such a big future normally for healthy food, and especially in the US. If you see how many people have problems with their weight in the US, it should be a great success story for the next years.
David, I read up in this food service Jubiläumsausgabe, and you know that we are part of food service, and I read this interview, I reread this interview you gave, where you were one of the top 30 or 40 people in Germany in the last decades, and you described yourself very self-reflected again. I'm not easy, sometimes I'm a loner, and I'm definitely stubborn. And then on the other hand, we have this quote from Rainer Becker, who said, like, as a leader, you need to kill your ego, which is probably the opposite of being stubborn. Do you think, looking back, this stubbornness, which you described yourself as a Dickschädel, even used a stronger word in German, was that helpful because it made you resilient, or was that rather harmful? How do you look at that? I mean, you cannot change it anyway. You are who you are, but it's a quite unique description of yourself. How do you look at that?
I think it was totally helpful. I mean, I don't want to tell you how often I heard, especially in Germany, maybe it's a German thing compared to the US, which is totally different, but how many people told me, that's not going to work. I wouldn't do that. That's too dangerous. Don't do that. Don't go for that. That's enough. And so on and so on. So, and I don't disagree. I mean, kill your ego. That doesn't mean to me that you can't be stubborn. Yeah, kill your ego doesn't mean for me. You have to when you see things don't work, and maybe it's your fault, nevertheless, you have to change it. So that's an ego thing. Some people think, well, I think that's the right way, and then they go and they go down the down because they're not willing to change things. I'm not like this. If I'm stubborn, of course, I'm only stubborn, let's say it like this, when I'm totally convinced that it works, but only as long as I don't see it does not work. So you have to be brave, and stubbornness for me in this context is a positive attitude.
It definitely pays into this resilience, which was basically is the main theme, that as a leader you have to be able to bounce back and you have to be resilient in crisis. Sorry, Florian, you wanted to ask something.
And because you were saying that about stubbornness and ego, and I was thinking, what would the young David think about the present David if he sees you now?
Probably you would say, congratulations, well done. Yeah. I hope.
Good job.
good job, well done. You brought us where the young David wanted to bring us. So I achieved all of my goals, I would say. And so that's something that worked out well. Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally, in Germany we say, rein im Reinen mit sich selber. Yeah? Fine
zen.
Zen, yeah. So I had the pleasure to do something which I love to do. I had the pleasure to do something which I totally believe in, that is something good, which is not easy. Yeah, I mean, imagine you work for an oil company or whatever. So it could be a well-paid job, but nevertheless, you know, well, it's not really good for at least for the environment. Just an example. Yeah. So, I can say, Dean David, the idea of Dean David is positive. It's positive for our society. It's positive for our environment. It's positive for the people, for the health, and so on. And so it's a great feeling, to really stand behind what you're doing.
Right. David, I know, or I think that you're the person I know which reads most of the newspaper online or offline, and you basically aware of everything what happens in that world. When you reflect the current situation in your microcosmos and also in the world per se, what are the main things which concern you, which keep you up at night?
Oh, where to start? I mean, we all know that there's a lot going on at the moment, which is a bit like healthy food and fast food, that we still have war, even we all know that there's only losers when it comes to war, and that it's a total disaster for everyone. We still have a lot of wars going on. So it's the same. The people, they don't learn to eat healthy, and they don't learn to stop war. It's kind of crazy on the one hand, but on the other hand, as you just said, I read a lot, and always was interested in history. And when you take a look back, first outcome is, on the long run, it always turned out to be positive, even after Second World War. When you take a look at the picture of Germany, the city is totally destroyed, everybody bankrupt. You would have never imagined that 10 years later, there's the so-called Wirtschaftswunder, and it's prospering again. Everybody is driving around with a new car, and the cities are rebuilt and whatever. So humans have a great attitude of coming back, even out of the greatest disasters. And the other positive thing is that we probably expect now, or we think, my generation, your generation, the younger people, they think, oh, what world we're living. It's crazy. There's a war here, there's a war there, and so on and so on. But if you look back in history, war is almost all of the time humans have been in war, and there were all of the times disasters and nature catastrophes, and so on and so on. So what we see now is actually not a difference to the last 2,000 years. And yeah, we survived, and overall it went well. So that keeps me in a positive attitude for the future, at least. Yeah.
So, Florin, I let you the signature question today. You've been very patient.
My last question is actually, with your experience as an entrepreneur starting with the age of around 25 and looking back now and all your experience, if a young entrepreneur who is doing a startup comes reaching out for you in need for help, do you have a first aid kit where you say, look, this is what you can do now? What would be your advice?
The first thing I would tell him is what I told already before. So I will tell him or her, as long as the worst case didn't really took place, keep on fighting, be cautious, but don't let you demotivate by something that might happen or might even probably happen. As long as it did not really 100% happen, there's always a chance of fighting back and of surviving or whatever. That's the first thing. The second thing is be really honest with yourself. I see a lot of entrepreneurs fighting for something which is already dead because they are not willing to accept that it's dead. And that's tough because you've, on the one hand, you fight for something which is already dead, and on the other hand, you still spend time for that.
Mm,
you
know? And energy.
And energy. So instead of saying, okay, hey, I do something new, and spend my time wisely into something else. So, these are definitely two advices I would give. Mm-hmm. And then third advice, probably go for a hike. That's always a good advice. That's
go true. For a hike with David to get perspective. I think this, especially this point you brought before the hike, David, to really make an honest observation if it's still alive, the baby, the flame, the business, before you completely burn out and put the energy. And I think that always takes a very strong mirror, and it's also very painful. So I think you were right on track with your advice. We are within the time. I just want to have a last question because you're a fan of the show and, as you said, very reflective. If you want now to take the chance, David, to ask yourself a very strong, brutal question, which we haven't asked because we're nice. What would that question be you want to ask yourself at the end? What have we forgotten to ask you in the concept of doubt, roadblocks, struggle, entrepreneurship, gaining big drive? You can ask yourself a question and answer it yourself, David.
Have you been a good CEO? Probably is a tough question.
That's a good one. Have you been a good CEO?
I didn't expect that you asked me. I just thought I have to tell you a question that you should have asked.
That's the one, yes. So we asked that. Have you been a good CEO, David?
I would say 50-50 probably. 50%, I would say I have been a very inspiring CEO who was leading forward. Who had great ideas and so on and so on. And 50%, I would say, I have done too much on my own. I didn't involve team members or employees or franchisees in decisions. That's definitely a negative thing. Also with the so-called Zeitgeist, I mean, 20 years ago, the CEOs work different than they do now, so you have to adapt to new times. And I think this is kind of a short answer to a very complex question if you summarize 20 years of your work.
And very reflected and honest as always. So, David, thank you for your time. We keep an eye. Me anyway, but we are all curious on how David gonna spend most of his time besides being a father and finishing the house. So we're gonna see if we see David back with any project. And obviously, he's still involved as a co-founder and board member in his baby. Thank you for your time, David, and greetings to the lake.
Thank you, and greetings to Sri Lanka.
So, Mr. Schneider, an entrepreneur through and through,
a good
friend, and always good that he's like very direct, can't blood for the mund, as we say, like very unfiltered and very... Yeah. Refreshing. So let's compare Absolutely. The learnings. What do you have?
Let's start with David's reflection on being a young founder, a young entrepreneur. He said he didn't really knew how hard it is to start, but he thought that is a benefit looking back, that you are not aware of all the struggles and regulations and rules and responsibilities. And founding young, he said, is a benefit. And I think this can also go out to our listeners that who are young and thinking about starting something.
Do
he
it.
Said,
Just
do it. It's easier when you're 25 than when you're 45. And it's not so hard if you get bankrupt with the age of 25, but when you're 45. So it's it's...
Do it young. Do it young. Then he described himself as Dr. Doom. I hope for the best, but I expect the worst.
The worst.
And what it does to him, this attitude, is he can switch pretty fast into crisis mode because he expects constantly the crisis. Yeah. But then, and I think that's the, Dr. Rao would be proud of that philosophic reflection. And then he said, but as long as it didn't happen, the worst case, there is still a chance that it will not happen.
Right.
So the circle closes. I hope for the best. I expect the worst. But as long as it didn't happen, I still believe that there is a chance to do it. I really like that thought.
Yeah. But when it comes to crisis mode, on David's side, he also said, and he brought some examples out of COVID and difficult situation he had to deal with, that he can deal with pressure, that he's obviously a very resilient person who can deal with pressure. He goes out hiking or cycling. He stays positive, basically what you also already mentioned, and he's forward thinking. And he said, this is what I need to do in this situation of crisis.
But he also reflected and said, like, it takes a lot of energy to run the company, especially he was very self-reflective, especially the way how I did it. Like, I decided everything. I had to be involved in everything, long hours, strong commitment. And he had this attitude, and it's like a very, how should I say, like an entrepreneurial trait. They say, you have to do it because it needs to be done. And it felt like when David was talking about it, it felt like if nobody did it, it was him to do it. And that was tiring.
Yeah. At the same time, I mean, he said on the long run, it turns out positive all the time, no matter what. Humans have the great attitude of doing things good, getting back, overcoming roadblocks. So there is still a positivity in what he's doing, even though in a crisis mode. And he said, as an advice for young entrepreneurs, be conscious, but keep on fighting. Don't get demotivated. There's always a chance that it becomes better.
Mm-hmm. And then he said, and I want to jump on that. He said, but you also have to be brutally honest. If that thing, what you're fighting for, the company, the idea, etc., is it still alive? But I always do this Monty Python sketch where somebody walks in with a parrot. And with a dead parrot, and basically doesn't want to realize that this parrot, this idea, this company is dead. And we will put that into that show notes, but it's like, the sales guy was that this parrot is dead. This parrot is dead. And I think once it's dead, as David described, then it's not worth your energy. And then you better kind of use the energy left in you as a leader and founder and entrepreneur to start something else. So I think there is a thin line between the resilience, which David described and is proud of, and the recognition of the reality. So a lot of learnings, a great wrap up. So greetings to Hamburg, Florian. Enjoy
greetings
your
to Sri Lanka
on the next travel and talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. We hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we did. But sharing is not just caring. It is also empowering. So recommend this podcast to fellow entrepreneurs who might need a dose of inspiration. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you'll never miss out on future episodes. Thank you for being part of the community from Doubt to Drive Entrepreneurs Only. Mario and Florian are already gearing up for the next episode. Until then, stay tuned, stay driven, and we'll be back next week.